Fish number 17625, William Glaister, reel 7.
Mr. Glaister, reel 7. What are your memories of the enemy action which ultimately led to you being, in effect, trapped in the box and had to break out?
Well, we formed a bridgehead. We split up two columns. We didn't have the support to travel as a battalion, so we split up, obviously, into two groups.
Did you realise at this time just how bad things were? Had you any idea that things were as desperate as...
Well, we knew it was a dodgy situation, but we never thought of the outcome.
You'd be coming under fire by now, were you not?
No. No. We split up into two groups, and we got through. We lagered up in this wadi.
Was this dark at night?
Yes, at night time. We lagered up in this wadi, and then me and a lad called George Fearon was on the brand gun in the wadi. Well, when I say in the wadi, just near the top of the wadi, you could see over the... And next night, when it was dark, we decided to push on again. And we're in this column, and I was the last vehicle in the column, following the Padre. And as we're driving along, I heard this voice say, "Halt!" And I knew straight away it was enemy. So I tried to get on the inside, away from the voice. The party's truck, but Captain Burden Taylor pulled us in and he says, "Slow down." Well, he didn't have any equipment on or anything. And when we got up to the sentry, he said, "Put your foot down, it's eye tie." Well, if he'd had his equipment on, he could have shot that sentry, and that would have been it. But no. "Put your foot down inside." Well, I tried to get on. He strafed the vehicle. And I tried to get on the inside. He set it on fire. The Padre's truck. And I couldn't. So it was every man for himself. So I just jumped out the vehicle and ran as fast as I could away from the voice. And I had my overcoat on. It was full of cigarettes in my pockets. But the anxiety, I just off with me over and carried on. Really, I was exhausted. I couldn't carry on any longer. And I lay facing the direction in which I'd come from. And I saw two crouching figures coming towards us. And I said, right, to myself, if these are eye ties, and I halt them, and they've got arms, they'll probably throw their arms down. So I take a chance. Now halt. "Halt, who goes there?" He said, "Friend." I said, "Advance, friend, and be recognised." And of course it was Captain Burden Taylor and his batman, a lad called Sims. Anyway, he said, "I've got a compass. I know where our troops have got the bearing and everything." He says, "Well, push on." We pushed on, but before daylight, he decided to stop and have a smoke. They had cigarettes. And he had a blanket, but where he getting the blanket from, I do not know. But he had a blanket, so we huddled up underneath the blanket, lit up, and when we lit up, I seen the blood on Sims, his batman. And I said to him, "Have you been hit?" He says, no, he says, it's off Corporal Young. He was killed on the back of the truck. Anyway, we'll have a smoke. And we decided to carry on under Captain Burden Taylor. He's leading the way, he's got compass. And about 3:30 that afternoon, in the distance you could see this big armoured column going through. So we lay low and he just stood up and pulled his handkerchief out of his pocket and waved his handkerchief. He didn't give us the chance to say, well, we want to carry on. Can we have the compass and the bearings, you know? We'll carry on. He didn't do that. He just surrendered. And now my car pulled out and picked it up and give the Germans due. There were Germans. Give them due. Asked them for food and water. And they said, all we can give you is what we've taken off you, people. And they got a hard tack biscuit of them. My Italian, a big square biscuit. Tin of bully beef and a drink of water. And that was it. And then...
You felt that Captain Burden Taylor had let you down?
Yes, definitely, in my opinion. I mean, he didn't give it all to proceed with the intentions, or his intentions. He knew where the troops were. He had the bearing, he had the compass. But he didn't give us a chance to take over. He just waved his handkerchief, and that was the end of the story.
Before we go any further with the story, is the description of what you just said, was that at Gazala, or was it a day or two later when you're at Merseytru?
Oh, this is south of Merseytru.
So you'd come through the Gazala situation?
Yeah, oh yes.
Coming away from Gazala, how did you get away from there?
From Gazala.
Well,
took a chance. And we weren't interrupted until the second move.
You didn't come out via Tobruk, did you, along the coast?
No, no, no.
So
no.
It would be out in the desert and right away around, was it?
Yeah. Well, when we woke up next morning after breaking out of the wadi, we crossed the frontier to Egypt again. And I saw the 9th Battalion getting marched off. They'd been captured, the 9th Battalion. And I thought, well, thank the Lord, we're safe. We're back in Egypt again. But your boys, it didn't happen like that.
On your truck, you had yourself, obviously, and Captain Burden Taylor was on the same truck as you.
Yeah, he was in the front with me.
How many had you on the back?
Two. His Batman and Corporal Young. The Corporal Young was killed. And Burden Taylor, his equipment was on the floorboards of the truck. If he had his revolver in his hand, even, he could have shot the sentry, and that would have been it. But he didn't. He just said, put your foot down, it's high tie. Well, it was too late. Certainly stuffed the vehicle. Set it on fire, killed Corporal Young, and it was every man for himself after that.
Did you ever find out what happened to the Padre and the others? Did they get away?
Yeah, as far as I know. But I lost contact with things, you see. I was taken a prisoner of war.
So the Germans took you with the armoured car.
Yeah.
What happened to you then?
I handed over to the Italians.
Did they drink from the Germans?
Oh, yeah. I was at south of Merseytru when I was handed over and taken up to Tobruk by transport. I was in Tobruk for 3 days without food or drink, without food or water. And a German guard, I knew him by the name of Paul. He fired 2 shots in the pipeline to give us water, you know. Where the hell they got the containers from, I haven't a clue. But they were there, you couldn't get near the water point for the Indians.
3 days that you're in Tobruk, where did they keep you?
Oh, they were wired off in the compound, you know.
And as you say, there was yourselves, Indians,
all sorts, yeah. All was the right mixture. Yeah. But I think they were from the Fourth Indian Div.
Then what happened to you?
Then I was taken from Tobruk to Derna. And that's when I first seen greenery. Derna, lovely. Yeah. And then from there to Benghazi.
Was this by truck?
Yes.
And escorted by Italians?
Oh, yes.
Were they feeding you and giving you water on these journeys? Was they quite long?
Well, you got your little snack, a biscuit, you know, but it was a pittance, really.
How did you feel now that you're in enemy hands?
Well, very despondent. You thought of home and you thought of other things, you know. If I had been in such and such a place, I wouldn't have been here today. You know, it's just one of them things, I suppose.
Did you feel safety? Your life was safe? Although you were a prisoner?
Well, I was a prisoner of war, and I thought, well, fair dues, I'm out of the danger zone as far as rifles and that was concerned. But from Derna, we moved up to Benghazi, and we're on the canvas there in a wired off compound. And there was a salt lake there, and I used to go out into the salt lake and carry sacks of salt for an extra pint of skilly. And I stayed there as long as I possibly could, hoping that our troops would come and relieve us.
What was skilly?
Well, what was it? Water and a little bit of veg or something in it, you know.
Something like a soup.
Yeah. We call it skilly. Anyway, I was in Benghazi when our bombers bombed the harbour, the ammunition dumps and whatnot. And it came to a push where we're no longer able to stay in Benghazi. We had to go down to the docks, board the ship and be moved to Italy. Now, at the time I didn't know, but the ship prior to us going to Italy was sunk. And I don't know what happened, whether the lives, whether they were lost at sea or what, I don't know. But fortunately we arrived in Italy okay.
What were the conditions like on the boat?
Oh, we were packed like sardines down below. You could hardly get your breath.
Were you allowed on deck for any air during the journey?
No.
How did they feed and water you?
Well, you just got bits and pieces here and there, you know. You didn't. Some blokes was that weak. They couldn't even get the bits and pieces. They were that weak. And then we got to, I think it was Brindisi.
How long was the journey?
2 or 3 days, I think. We got to Brindisi, and we're in this dried up river bed. And word come around that there was a Red Cross parcel, one between 7. Well, we'd marched to this position, and my feet were bleeding. And Tommy Marley from Teams College, just up the road here, I said, "Tommy, no way can I go and get my share. Can I get half my mess then?" I says, "Just put mine in there, will you?" Right on. So there's a couple of boys switched with papers on, a spoonful of sugar, dried tea, spoonful of milk, Nestle's milk or something, a couple of biscuits, and I just headed out with a bloody mess then with a pair of sweets with a pair of muscles on the tea, dry tea, roti. I just spooned a lot.
What date would this be now?
Oh, I think it was the 26th of June when I was captured. 3 days, and then we went up to Derna. We weren't there very long. It'd be getting on to the back end of 42, October, November time, I would think.
So between July and then, where had you been? Oh, it's quite a long time. You'd obviously been, obviously,
June.
Benghazi. Oh, back in the June, yeah.
26th of June, I was in the prisoner of war. Yeah.
But what you're telling me now was October, and that's quite a gap in time.
Yeah, but that was from Mirza Matru up to Tobruk, Derna, Benghazi, and then on the ship across to Italy.
Right. Had you, was there a camp now? Were we taken to a camp?
Yes, PG 70.
What were conditions like in there?
Well, not too bad, I suppose.
Can you describe the camp to me?
Well, we were surrounded by barbed wire, and I remember three guardsmen had tried to get through the wire and escape, and they were shot, and their bodies were just hung on the wire, and we were marched around the perimeter all day. See the bodies, but while we're blowing up ground, we made our own little stoves with Red Cross tents, etc., you know, and you got a Red Cross parcel, one between 7 and every so often they used to shunt an empty wagon into the compound to load up the empty tins. Now, I'd received my first letter. I got it from my father. But in fact, the first letter I should have got was from my brother, to say that my mother had died. She was only 46. And I was determined to get away then. So, as I say, they used to shunt this empty wagon into the compound and load it up with empty tins, and then take it out down the port. Port of San Giorgio. I think that was it. Yeah, Port of San Giorgio. Anyway, I decided to get in this truck and get covered up with tins. Now, the piece of tubing, Mount Atlant, which I use for get ventilation, you see. And I was shunted out of the compound, and it must have taken, well, what seemed an eternity. I says, it must be dark now. It's bound to be dark. And I was at Port of St. George at the time, in the side, you see. I'd lay there all day and I'd dare not budge, and I waited, and I thought, well, it must be dark now. And I decided to get out of the truck, and the noise of the tins disturbed the carabinieri and his girlfriend, and of course I was picked up and taken back to camp. I was stripped and searched for compasses, anything, you know. My cell was hose piped. But fortunately, the next morning I was allowed out. But I had to wear a jacket and a pair of trousers with a white patch on the knee and one on the back to denote that I was an escapee. Now, at this time, they were wanting volunteers for working camps. Well, with me having these patches on, I could never get abroad. You know, I could never get to a work camp. So I was on the Brunhub ground this year, and I saw this Lance Bombardier out there, out the guards, out the artillery. And I said to him, "Are you not going on the work camp?" He said, "No way." I says, "Well, do you mind swapping me uniforms?" I says, "Because I would let you get on the one." So he did. And I got his uniform and he got mine, and I got onto a working camp eventually and went up near Tobruk.
The
not Tobruk, Milan.
Before we go into your working party situation, the camp itself was a large one?
Oh yeah, it's pretty large.
Hooded?
And we had a central hall there. And when the weather was bad, rain and wet, they would march you into the central hall and they would call the roll there. But otherwise, the roll was called outside.
And that was every morning, was it?
Every morning and night, yeah.
Did you get up to any antics to confuse them and make life a bit difficult for them?
No. No, you were just lined up and they called the roll.
You were in huts, were you? In huts in this PT-70?
Yeah, yeah.
How many men to a hut?
Oh, well, I couldn't say. There was quite a lot. But we were in three-tier beds, you know. Top tier, middle tier, bottom tier. Three bunks.
What were you lying on?
Well, you just...
Was it a mattress or a...
Pallias, you know, the mattress.
What facilities were there for washing and latrines?
Well, just outside the camp gardens, we called them, there was the showers, and you used to get into a shower at least once a week. So you really couldn't complain. And then you had your ablutions, but it was all cold water. You shaved and washed in cold water, no hot water. In the central hall, you were allowed in there for sporting activities, boxing, which I took up. I was determined to keep fit, as fit as possible anyway.
Put concerts on, entertainment of
no,
that nature?
No.
How was the camp organised in the discipline sense? Who ran the camp?
Well, Italian, but we were under Sergeant Majors was in charge of certain compounds, you know, of certain parties of people.
So you run your own army military discipline?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Cooking and food, was that okay?
Well, we cooked our own.
Oh, you cooked your own, did you?
Yeah. Apart from your skilly, like. You got your skilly, but...
And how was that done? Did you have your own little cookhouse situation?
No, you had Italian cooks. But you had your cookhouse fatigue men. You know, people who volunteered to work in the cookhouse.
Did you go to a central dining hall, or how did you get your food, and where did you eat it?
Well, you got it. You got your food in your head, in your hut, you know, in your room.
Was it sufficient?
No, it wasn't sufficient, but it was. You see, you got a Red Cross parcel, one between seven, when they were available. And stuff out of there. You would walk around the camps, you would set away in the morning with a little tin of cheese and a tin of peak cream biscuits. You would walk around the camp bartering, and you would swap them for a tin of meat roll or something. You know, and you just worked around, and you probably, at the end of the day, you probably won a tin of biscuits or a tin of cheese, you know.
Was there a black market working?
Well, that was the black market, but it was our own black market, you know what I mean? We just bought out our own stuff. And the Italian on the showers, he used to come to the gate and he used to slip me a tin of cheese or something, and he'd slip me a packet of cigarettes, you know. You had a little... This George Fearon, I was telling you, we were in this woody on the Bren gun, and he got a cutting from the Sunderland Echo to say he'd been awarded the military medal, and he went haywire. He was standing, he was on the top bunk, and he was serving tea and sugar and all sorts around. He was at a wedding, and they took him away, you know, put him in the loony bin somewhere, and that was the last I seen him. And I did make inquiries when I come home, and I was told he was dead, but where he died or how he died, I don't know.
Were you medically examined from time to time whilst you're in this main camp in 1870?
No. Of course, you could go sick if need be.
And who would you go to sick? Did you have a British doctor?
You had a sick bay.
Had a British sick bay?
Yeah.
And was that with an officer, a British doctor, or medical personnel?
Well, medical personnel, but sometimes there was medical doctors as well. Of course, they were in a different compound to us, you see. They were separate from us. They weren't in the same camp as us.
What were the Italian guards like? Were they harsh or?
No, not really. I suppose they had their job to do, but they weren't harsh. They did kill three guardsmen, like. But I suppose that was in the line of their duty. They had to do it. And they just hung their bodies over the barbed wire and made us march around them. Look at them all day.
Were there any escape attempts other than your own whilst you were there?
Not to my knowledge. No, not to my knowledge. No.
What's the big problem of being a prisoner of war? What have you got to contend with more than anything else as a prisoner?
You've got to be patient. You haven't got to let things get on top of you. If you do, you just crack up, you know, and that's no good at all.
Was it difficult with relationships? You know, you're crowded into one room, were there looking falling out
tips no.
of this nature?
No, I suppose we're a happy crowd because it was a relief, really, to get away from what we'd been through, you know, and to be settled in one place and at least know how you stood, you know, because prior to that, I mean, life was bloody hell. I was in Tobruk for 3 days without food or water, you know. And that's not nice things, not nice experiences.
You were very much then left to your own devices so far as keeping yourselves occupied.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Or you weren't marched or anything like that.
Was there a roll call at night as well as in the morning?
Yeah. You had one in the morning and one at night.
And what time was reveille?
Well, no set time. But you were always up. Because you're on British senior ranks made sure that you were up, you know. I mean, you couldn't just lie in bed. You had to get up.
Did you have your own personal, or shall I say personal in the sense of, did you have your own army discipline as well as the discipline of the Italians?
Oh, yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you stepped out the line, the sergeant major, he would report you, and you you punished in a sense. You know what I mean? You might be deprived of confined to barracks. You know, you couldn't go into the brown up ground. You weren't free to move around. You were restricted, you see.